This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It is Tuesday, it's the 9th of April, 2024. Coming up, more of your feedback, and we kick off with a discussion about Pi AI. Oh, I like that.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
You know, I broke the cardinal rule of broadcasting there, Sean Preece, because when I said pie, I popped. Which is not good when you pop like
Stop
that.
Stop popping.
You're not supposed to do that.
No plosives on Double Tap. Yes, hello, Stephen. How are you?
Guy, you know, could complain.
Okay, cool. I love pie. There, I just want to kick off with that.
In steak.
Yes, well
Apple.
Done. Yes. Do you know, I got a message from Mickey B last night saying, Sean, I didn't really take heed of you when you were saying how good pie was, and yet I've just tried it and it's amazing. So thank you and you're welcome, Michael.
Mm. Well, I thought it might be interesting for you to hear that Tom has been in touch with us, and we're going to kick off with an email from Tom. It's quite a lengthy email, but it's well worth listening to on his experiences of using Pi. So Tom, over to you, as read, of course, by Laura.
Hi, Sean and Stephen. Tom from Colorado, USA here. Sean has been quite exuberant about the Pi personal AI assistant. I thought I might go see what has him all aflutter. My initial impressions were quite mixed. I definitely agree with Sean that, in general, Pi's performance and utility is very impressive. My usage environments are Windows 10, using the Edge browser on my desktop computer, and Android for my phone. I started with downloading the Android app on my phone. I'm a screen reader user. TalkBack on Android and Narrator on Windows. I have some vision, but I need the screen reader for reading of text more than a few words at a time. I do find navigation a bit more efficient with my limited remaining vision. One of my many eye conditions is photophobia, so I need a dark mode UI, generally high contrast black. So I immediately bumped into the problem that Pi came up with, the all too common bright white user interface colour scheme. It did not query the system for my default colour scheme, as it should, and match that in the app. On top of that, there was no way to manually select a dark mode user interface scheme. Granted, I can and do use the Android accessibility controls to entirely invert the colours in cases such as this, but that is a half measure at best, for many reasons, not the least of which is that most app tools, like the on-screen keyboard, will likely then come up in the wrong colour scheme and you have part of your display in the right colour scheme and the other half in the wrong colour scheme. So I thought this was a good opportunity to ask Pi about the problem. Pi worked valiantly and patiently, but we quickly ran into a clash of realities. It repeatedly insisted that its Android app had the ability to set the user interface theme, but every attempt it made was fruitless as the app I was running did not have the buttons and the menu items it assured me should be there. I had just loaded the app, so it should have been the most up-to-date version. Pi agreed that should be the case. It finally concluded I must be using some imposter app from the Google Play Store. I'm certain I was not. We spent quite a bit of time going around on that matter. It was hung up on the fact that my description of the icon associated with the app wasn't the one it expected. I found that to be an odd hill to die on. But Pi really wanted to solve this mystery, so we shifted gears. Venue. And I opened up the app on my desktop computer, Windows 10 Edge browser at their URL, pi.ai. That opened up a whole new set of issues. In that environment, the user interface colour scheme wasn't an issue. My system and browser were configured to give the dark mode user interface I needed, and their web interface didn't mess with that. But I really wanted to be able to converse with Pi with both of us using voice. Right out of the gate, I was able to get Pi to speak its responses to me in my Pi voice of choice, number 4. I did not find a way, however, to have it accept microphone input for my prompts to it. I can assure you my microphone was connected and operational. Pi insisted the website had a microphone icon in the lower right corner, which would be the gateway to achieving this. The button did not exist. I didn't see it, and the narrator did not reveal any button element of that sort on the page. So we then went down the rabbit track of trying to address that problem, all to no avail. Oh, by the way, the app icon displayed on the website was identical to the one I was seeing on the app I was using on the Android app. See prior Pi disillusion. Again, Pi really wants to figure this whole situation out, so it suggested another approach. Use Pi's WhatsApp interface. So off we went down that rabbit track. I brought up WhatsApp on my Android phone and initiated a chat at the number Pi provided. Again, I prefer to converse with folks on WhatsApp using voice messages. Right out of the gate, Pi was able to pass my prompts from the voice messages I sent to it. That's good. However, it only replied to me via text, so I had to toggle on TalkBack in order to have it read the text replies. But when I wanted to send it a new prompt via voice message, I had to toggle TalkBack off, since we all know that TalkBack and WhatsApp's voice message input don't play well together. If you can come up with the magic TalkBack equivalent of the long press and hold gesture, you will find that TalkBack's voice will stomp over the beginning of every recording with some message saying you are in such and such a mode. But I digress. So to avoid that cumbersome situation, I asked Pi to please respond to me via voice message rather than text. Being the utterly compliant AI assistant, it said it would, complete with a witty beep-boop-beep sequence indicating it was working on making that change. But despite that, all subsequent replies from Pi were still in text form, but now prepended with voice. I pointed this out, but Pi just said it was baffled because it was sending me voice messages. I really felt like Pi was gaslighting me. I told it as much, and it assured me it wasn't. Needless to say, I was out of gas on this exercise. For now, I'm still impressed with its perseverance and general ability to converse. It's very impressive. I'm continuing to use it and appreciate it. I've resorted to using the Android app. Since much of the conversing really doesn't utilise the UI much, I can avoid the bright white UI abrasiveness most of the time. One interesting and valuable use case I've found is getting it to summarise terms of service. I started with its own terms of service. I think it does a good job, but I couldn't tell you definitively because who actually reads those things? I'm really impressed at how it can go off and find and digest loads of information with the briefest of prompts. So I can see why Sean is so aflutter about Pi. But as I was composing this message, I heard that the company who produced Pi has been purchased by Microsoft. It will be interesting too to see what that means. I hope that they don't mess it up. I know this was a long message. I look forward to hearing delightful Laura bring my words to life. Thanks, Tom.
And there you did. You heard Laura bring your words to life. And I'm really glad that you sent that in, because I think it's just another interesting perspective on apps like this, right, Sean?
Oh, absolutely. It's so frustrating because the functionality of the app, as in what it can offer you, is absolutely fantastic. And then you have these accessibility hurdles in there. And it's good timing, actually, because I mentioned Michael getting in touch with me, saying that he started to use Pi, and he uses it through the website. Now, I use it through the iPhone app. I have tried it on Android as well, and there were issues there. For starters, when you first install it, there's an inaccessible screen at the start that you need to swipe through to get to the continue button, which is totally inaccessible with a screen reader on. So you need to turn TalkBack off and then swipe through. It's a real pain. And I have had a conversation with Pi itself saying these buttons aren't labeled correctly. And I had the whole, yes, there is a team at Inflection of blind and disabled people that do go through and check that it's not, of course not. I've had that argument with it myself. And you're absolutely right. There's these problems there. And I did go to the website itself and I could not find a microphone button. The new feature there is that it will respond to you in a fantastic TTS voice, but I can't find a microphone button either. But besides all of that, what I use it for all the time, and I'm not saying accessibility isn't important, of course not. I've got in touch with them. I've talked to Pi about it itself. I've emailed to point out these problems. But all I ever do is find the call with Pi button. And I just swipe to that, go through the buttons, tap on that, and I have a conversation. Now, again, this is on Android and iPhone. On the website, I wasn't able to do that. But Michael was telling me that he uses Windows dictation on the website. So he has a conversation by simply hitting Windows H in the text field, dictating his question, tabbing, hitting the send button, and that's the way he uses it. So, I totally agree with you. It's so frustrating, and these accessibility problems could be sorted out so quickly that it is frustrating. But I think the general functionality of Pi is amazing, and I'm quite happy. I will just say this. Ask Pi if they've been bought by Microsoft, by the way. She gets very, very serious very quickly, saying, No, they haven't. Some of the team have moved and been hired by Microsoft, but the company itself is still Inflection, has not been bought. That's always an interesting conversation. She can get quite angry. So yes, I take all that on board, Tom. You're absolutely right. But I will say, stick with it. See if you can find a workaround. Turn your screen curtain on maybe, and just find that call with Pi button. It's definitely worthwhile.
Yeah, wonderful to hear about all these apps. And, you know, I've been using it myself. I think it's very good. I just think there's so much distrust at the moment in sometimes the information that it's giving. It's good when you know it's an error. Like you say, you know, there's a team of blind people working here. Really?
I don't believe you, I think is what I responded.
The problem is that people might think that's true. That's the problem with some of this, when this kind of misinformation comes along via these apps, or lies, or hallucinations, whatever words you want to use to describe it. I mean, ultimately, it is a lie because it's not true, right? So, you know, it's a challenge. On the point of purchase, so Microsoft announced that it had hired two of the three founders of Inflection AI, as well as most of the startup's employees, which is how, it's interesting, it seems to be how a lot of companies now are doing this. Instead of buying the company, they're luring the people over to the company, and therefore they get the brains in the room. But it's also important to say, and there's not much known about the deal here. According to Fast Company, there's not a lot known about the deal, except that it contained guarantees for the startup's investors, and that the tech giant also bought the rights to sell access to Inflection's most powerful model. So details are starting to come to light, but apparently they've paid Inflection, Microsoft that is, have paid Inflection AI $620 million for the non-exclusive right to sell access to the Inflection AI model through its Azure cloud over a multi-year period.
Non-exclusive.
Companies have confirmed that, according to Fast Company. Microsoft paid an additional $33 million for a waiver from claims against it related to hiring Inflection employees. But according to an internal document shared with Fast Company, that was only one aspect of the agreement. So they're saying, and it goes into a huge amount of detail here in this article about, you know, part of the money will perhaps go back to towards buying back the equity of existing Inflection shareholders. Basically, you know, sort of bringing the company in by the side door, let's say.
Yes.
Not so much the back door, but I mean, good news for the company, great news for the people who are involved, because they're obviously getting into Microsoft and being able to get that in. And you know, I have to say, a smart move by Microsoft. That's what's going on. That's what's going on at the moment. It's a land grab at the moment. All these companies are doing the same. Apple, Google, Microsoft, they're all going after the best models to find the best way forward here, to find the tool that's going to, you know, do it the best way. I think Pi is very good. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Microsoft. I'd like to think accessibility would be improved if there's issues there. But
absolutely.
It's time will tell and all of that, I think. But very, very interesting. Thank you, Tom, for the email. If you've been trying out any of these different types of apps for conversational AI purposes, then do let us know. It's a conversation I'm sure we'll continue having. You know, it's funny, though, right? I was thinking about this when you were saying about, you know, the challenges it's got with the app. I was just thinking, you know, wouldn't it be cool if you could say to the app, you know, hey, that button isn't labeled, and it could just do it and fix it? You know, if it was like a two-way street, if it could go off and then fix the app, that's surely going to come eventually, right? In 10 years' time, that's going to happen. Oh, that button isn't labeled. Okay, I'll label it then. What do you want it called?
Yeah.
Problem solved. That'll be
the potential of AI. That's where we keep looking towards, right? Because it's just the thing I find really impressive with Pi is just the context awareness. It always knows or seems to know what I'm talking about, and it always seems to get the context right. Now, the facts behind it, yes, there's hallucinations there, definitely, and you can argue with it to get it to change its mind. But it's just so impressive and so responsive, and I'm really happy that now Microsoft has taken this on. I believe the CEOs are being put in charge of consumer AI. So, you know, I'm very happy about this. I think this is currently, this is my go-to AI app.
And of course, there's the big news out of the UK that Microsoft are developing a tech hub in London focused on AI. And of course, a big news story this week about Canada as well, investing huge amounts of money into development of AI technologies. So yeah, there's a lot of business potential here. A lot of new startups are going to come out of all of this. And it's going to be a very interesting time. This is kind of like, I always think back to the development of the App Store. But I would say that the difference Here is this is much more public. This feels much more public than what happened with the App Store.
Yep.
Lots of developers came along, lots of startups, lots of land grabs going on. All that happened with the App Store as well, but we didn't really hear about it as much. I don't think we paid as much attention to it back then. We were more interested in the results.
Yes, yeah.
Possibly. But I feel this time around we're more aware of what's going on behind the scenes, or at least what happens behind the scenes. And therefore, we're kind of more aware of it. It's very interesting, though. But anyway, well, let's move on, because Greg in Pennsylvania has been in touch, back down to earth with a bump, with the subject of sunglasses.
Your listener in Michigan was seeking darker sunglasses. Noir and Eschenbach both make sunglasses in a wide variety of colours and differing levels of light blocking. They are available through those vision mail order outfits like LSS and Maxi Aids, among others, and their descriptions will tell you what percentage of light they allow through. Back before Stephen was born, my first O&M instructor took me out on a sunny day and opened a case with hundreds of different shades of sunshields to try out, so I could choose the most comfortable colour and shade. But the glasses in those days were monstrously unstylish. About 20 years ago, a low vision specialist ordered a very nice pair of Eschenbach sunglasses, which were pricey, but wonderful. Later I decided I needed a darker pair of sunglasses, but just went to a sunglasses hut and tried lots of sunglasses until I found one that worked well. It took a long time, but was worth it. When I could still see well enough, I kept a variety of sunglasses for different weather conditions and activities. Corning made a line of sunglasses in a variety of shades specifically for boaters, fishermen and swimmers, called the H2O Sport Series, and these were terrific and affordable, all polarised and comfortable, but I can't find them anymore. Greg in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I remember those days when they'd have the big case of glasses that you would, you know, essentially trying out the different styles, but also the different colours to see what worked best for you. And it's a shame. I feel there's a lot of, and I can only speak about the UK, Greg, I don't know about the States, but, you know, I know here our O&M instructors, our orientation and mobility instructors, just don't have those tools to hand, it seems, which is a shame. Because
do you think, that's so important though, isn't it, eyewear?
What I don't understand is, why, I mean, is it because, I don't know what's going on. I mean, you feel like these kits would be in the hands of every rehabilitation worker. I mean, you know, from a business point of view, Eschenbach could make a lot of money out of this, right? And wouldn't that be what they want to do? So, you know, I don't know. I see some interesting shifts in this world at the moment where, you know, for example, with Eschenbach in particular, you know, you can go to them for low vision aids, glasses. There's the ones they do for TV viewing as well. You know, the ones you can wear where it's like almost you're wearing mini monoculars. They've changed a lot over the years.
Oh,
they used to be particularly unsightly. Everyone looked like an optometrist all of a sudden, but we were wearing these big glasses with, you know, monoculars hanging off them. That's what I had. I remember having them years ago. And they both had, you know, their manual focus and all that. Of course, that's all changed now. You can get different types. There's the Bioptics range as well, which I think is from Eschenbach. Bioptics is an incredible device. I wish I had the vision to enjoy it, because basically it's a bit like having, and the only way I can describe it is like having a harmonica attached to a pair of glasses.
Yes.
Not the most attractive looking thing in the world, but what you do is you look through, so it's like a pinhole. It gets measured to the pinhole of vision that you have, or your pupil at least. So for someone with RP, for example, you could benefit from this if you had more vision, maybe more years ago than now, I guess. But
yeah,
you know, with that pinhole of vision that you do have or did have, you'd be able to sort of center that in the view, and you just look up to this, and you're able to read, you know, quite an incredible distance, which, you know, was brilliant for so many people. And I think in some parts of the world, in America, I think in particular, you can drive with these. I don't know how that's possible, but. Yeah, it's beyond me. That's not the case where I live, I'll tell you that.
But
otherwise, I'd be buying a car tomorrow.
Well, it's funny though. We always go to digital solutions, right, such as eSight or whatever. But yes, they can do amazing things. If you do have a area of vision in your sight anywhere, you can shift that around. If it's up at the top in your peripheral somewhere, it's amazing what they can do with lenses and optics. It's definitely something to look into.
Yeah, I mean, the irritant for me is that, you know, I would love to use this, but with nystagmus, the eye's constantly moving. So you've got that issue. So getting focus is the problem. you know, trying to focus on anything.
It's not
is
magic.
A challenge.
I'm just saying.
No, no, I know. But
it's not for everything.
But, no, exactly. But I'm just, from my point of view, it's just that that didn't work for me, sadly. But I'd love it to. And I think for some people, you can really see the value in that kind of technology. It is technology, optical technology.
That's true.
But it's not computer technology. And I think in some cases, and again, it's all very individual, but personally, I'd much prefer that kind of tech to the eSight version or the, well, any, frankly, any of these types of computer-based systems that have external cameras that present to an internal screen, and then you are looking at the internal screen. I just found it so much easier to see because the days I tried, and I tried it, goodness me, what, 10 years ago now I tried the bioptics?
Mm.
Probably around about 10 years ago. And I thought it was incredible because the level of clarity, and of course that wouldn't change. You know, it wasn't like it would be interrupted by some technical problem or the battery died.
Battery died.
It doesn't
yeah.
happen because it's just a magnification system.
And you know what? If it gives you that ability to do something that you couldn't do without wearing them, you tend to overlook how they look on you.
Absolutely.
The aesthetics of
yep.
it. You know what? It means I can watch TV or I can see this. Otherwise, I can't. I don't care. I'm putting them on. So, yeah. But, I mean, yeah. You know, different eye conditions, different solutions. So, but it's definitely something to be aware of.
And as Greg said himself, you know, it changes from day to day as well. You know, so your level of vision can be different, even different points of the day. It depends on the weather. I mean, I'm sure it's the same around the world at the moment, but well, in some places anyway. I know here in the UK, four seasons in one day is nothing unusual.
Yes.
You know, I can wake up in the morning, bright, bright sunshine, but, you know, middle of the day, grey skies and rain, end of the day, snow. You know, it can be different at any point in the day.
Not even joking. Yeah, that's right.
No, absolutely not. Now, speaking of Greg, he sent in a couple of messages, and I want to try and catch up with as much as we can in the inbox today. Greg also got in touch on my comments on Macs.
Stephen says there is a big shift among blind people from Windows to Mac, while the WebAIM survey says the number of screen reader users has never reached 10%, while in the general population, Mac accounts for 16% of computer users. Despite these low levels of blind Mac users in general, on Blind Tech podcasts in general, and on Double Tap in particular, Mac gets way more coverage than Windows does. There is the built-in bias, as Mac is often preferred for audio production, and blind podcasters are in the business of audio production, so that makes a lot of sense. And in the case of Double Tap, Stephen, of course, is a dedicated Apple fanboy and has also based his programming not on what the blindness community uses, but on his own personal preferences. Stephen, of course, is an immensely gifted radio presenter who can talk extensively and smoothly about anything, even if he has little or no knowledge about it. The rare gift that politicians and media personalities have of being likable, even when full of nonsense. Please keep in mind that only about 9 of 100 blind computer users are using Mac. Greg in Pennsylvania.
Thanks, Greg. It's always good to hear from you. I always feel better after hearing from Greg. I don't know, it just picks me up. I feel I need that email every so often.
Ah, put you in your place. Well, to be fair, I did say at the time when we were talking about the mass exodus to Mac, I mean, how truthful is that? I mean, you know, we can see a few posts on social media, a lot like we were talking about the VoiceDream Reader. I mean, how representative is those posts that you see. If you see 10 posts on there, you tend to think, oh, this is a thing that everyone's talking about. Actually, is that true? How do you know?
Yeah, I never said it was an absolute guarantee. I said it appears to be as if there are people who are making the move over, which is something I hadn't seen in a while. I hadn't seen a lot of that. I'd see so much talk about Windows, but I don't see many people talking about that switch. And it seemed there were more people talking about it. Certainly not saying for a second, Greg, there is a mass exodus. Never said that. And I never would say that because that would be ridiculous to say because there's no proof of that. And you're absolutely right. I mean, although the WebAIM survey is an interesting one you bring up because, as I've said as well, I don't entirely... I distrust the results. I just don't feel there's enough people getting involved in that WebAIM survey to give us a real picture of the big picture of what is going on in terms of our computer usage and our screen reader usage. I think what I would say though is I agree with you because I think it's a fairly well known fact that, you know, the Mac is not the biggest selling product Apple sells. It never really was. The iPhone is the winner, right? The iPhone is the seller from Apple.
Of course.
So you know, and if you go into any business in the land, you'll find PCs everywhere. And that's always going to be the case. Why do I talk about it so much? It's what I use. And it's my show. So, na-na-na-na-na, I guess.
Na-na-boo-boo.
I don't know. That's best, best result I could come up with on that one. You know, it's my show. I want to talk about Mac. It's what I talk about. Look, if people want to talk about Windows, go set up a Windows show. I think it's what I use. I can't sit here and talk about things I don't use. That would not be fair. And it's something we're addressing on the show, actually, as we go along. We're going to be talking to more people who are using, say, Android and Windows and other products that perhaps we're not using as much. I know you use Windows all the time.
Yes.
And we do talk about Windows. It's not like we don't talk about it. What are you talking about, Greg?
Well done. There's the smooth radio presenter, Stephen Scott, keeping his cool. Thank you for the email, Greg.
My ball, and I'm going to play with it. Okay, thank you, Greg. Do appreciate your comments, as always. Amy has been in touch on the subject of blind schooling.
Hi, Stephen and Sean. This is Amy Rule. I'm calling to respond to the discussion that you've been having with your listeners around public school versus a specialized education in a special school. I think the mileage really varies, and I think it is dependent on each person and on the circumstances. I was educated in the 1960s and 70s and went to public school from the very beginning. I am totally blind, which may have been fortuitous in that I was able to automatically receive Braille instruction, though not from a teacher of the blind or visually impaired, as there was no teacher in my area. However, one of the things that was most beneficial is that I received a superior education to the one that I would have received in a school for the blind. I had much greater access to advanced placement courses and to a diverse set of offerings. I was also fortunate in that since the school didn't know what to do with me, they basically expected me to perform as well as any other person, and I was not given very many passes. The only one that I can recall was that after trying to teach me geometry, they decided that that would be a pass-fail course for me since they didn't have the tools with which to teach me, and the books that the class was using were inaccessible. I think that one of the advantages for me in going to public school was that I really learned quite early how to interact with sighted people in a way that I have sometimes seen other people who've gone to schools for the blind struggle. And at least for me, this was a very important experience, and I think that it helped me eventually to be able to acquire and maintain employment, to obtain a superior education, and to interact socially with my peers, both blind and sighted. I understand that it is different for each person, but I think to try to make generalizations is an error, because I believe that each of us brings a unique set of skills and experiences, and that each system that we encounter is different. And one final thing I guess I would say is that if I were to have gone to the school for the blind, I would have had to be 100 miles away from home, which I think was the primary reason that my family tried to get me into public school when it had not been done before in my community, and which I think would have been really negatively impactful at age 5. Thanks so much. Enjoy your show and appreciate the opportunity to contribute.
We appreciate you contributing, Amy. Thank you so much for your views on that. I think they will resonate with a lot of people and give a rather interesting perspective. You've got me thinking, because I was a little bit of an absolutist on this, if I'm honest, but I think I'm changing my view after hearing you. Thank you for that, Amy. Look, stick around. More comments to come. This is Double Tap.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback
at doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us, feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Hey, don't forget, we're on YouTube. You know that thing called YouTube, Sean Preece? Have you been on there?
I've heard of it, yes.
It's very popular, you know. Apparently, it's very popular with the youth out there.
So why are we on there?
I have absolutely no idea. But I will say we are on there, at Double Tap Video. If you add that to youtube.com/, and then at Double Tap Video, you can catch up with lots of interesting content. We've been uploading videos over the weekend. If you want to hear more of my thoughts on the Apple versus the US Department of Justice case, you can join us as we talk to Michael Babcock. He is talking to us there. Also having a chat with him over on YouTube about CSUN. In particular, we're continuing the conversation on robot dogs.
You're
I
obsessed.
I love this conversation.
You're
I am.
I think
this is a cool thing. Anyway, you can hear the conversation between us and Michael on YouTube. Don't forget, of course, you can catch up here on AMI Audio and on podcast as well with our Best of YouTube at the weekend. That episode drops each Sunday. And just a reminder, all of our content is online as well at doubletaponair.com if you want to catch up with anything we're talking about here on Double Tap and on our sister show, Access Tech Live, which airs every week, Thursday, noon Eastern, live on AMI TV and on YouTube.
Whew. Well done. That was fantastic, Stephen
Thank you.
Scott.
Trying to remember all that stuff. Right, let's get a voicemail in from Glendon, who has some comments on voiceover issues.
Hi there, Stephen, Sean, Laura, and all Double Tappers. Glendon here. It's been a while since I called in, but I was just listening to a gentleman talking about his voiceover not pronouncing the word R. It's interesting. It happened to me too. I just troubleshooted it over my iPhone 14 Pro Max and my 10R, which I refused to update to the new OSs because it would just cause problems. It happens on my 10R, not my 14 Pro Max. So that's one thing. The next thing is that it happens with my keyboard and with VoiceOver. Interesting. I just went back. It used to happen with all words that had R in it, H-O-U-R, O-R, A-R-E, etc. But now it only happens with the word R, A-R-E. Fascinating. And it happens with dictation also. So I don't know how to fix it. And it doesn't even read the letters R. That's another thing, Sean. And I haven't even talked to Apple about it. I'm just beside myself with the convoluted issues that come up and go and cause problems. I've got worse problems with my iPhone and with my Apple technology to deal with. So that's my take on that. All I could suggest is to call Apple and register it. But I think that it's probably because he's got an older phone. And it's one of those problems that just seem to mysteriously appear, convincing you to buy a new phone. That's my take, and all the best, guys. Keep up the great work. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Glendon. I just don't understand why this would be a phone issue. It sounds like maybe a voice issue, perhaps. I just don't understand why the word R just seems to be...
It's so strange, isn't it?
It's bizarre. Incapable of reading it.
I was trying to troubleshoot this after we got the initial email. And Sarah, my partner, asked me what I was doing. And she said, I've been having exactly the same problem as well. She's got an iPhone 14. So it's, yeah, absolutely, it is an issue. I just can't quite figure it out. It's one of those strange ones. Why would it be? I would have straight away said it was voice specific. I'm not having the issue at all. And I tried quite a few different English speaking voices and I couldn't replicate the problem at that time. So, yeah, it's definitely a strange one.
Let's know how you got on with that. Of course, it's hard to get any movement from Apple on this if it's intermittent. Developers always find this hard when it's just a one issue at one point in one
it's
place.
It's got to be reproducible. Yes, that's the main thing.
I suppose if it's reproducible, is that a word?
Yes.
Then let's just say it is. then, you know, I guess you could screen record that maybe and send it to Apple. I don't know, but that's...
Yeah, but I mean, they need to be able to have the same problem, reproduce the same issue on their test systems as you're
having. Stop saying reproduce.
Reproduce. Sorry, carry on.
Let's hear from Rebecca. There we are. See, that's a move on. But reproduce to Rebecca.
I'm not thrilled with the prospect of Outlook turning into a web app, but if we are not allowed to keep the desktop version, then I might consider a Chromebook. I do not like the new File Explorer either, but there are ways to customize it. Windows has some tough multi-finger commands as well, particularly if you get a PC that does not allow you to lock the function key without going into BIOS. I prefer to have a choice of multiple screen readers. Now, here is what I like about the Mac. You have a number of commanders. All native apps are accessible with VoiceOver. I love the Apple menu. Sound quality is much better, even on the M1 Macs. It is fast and responsive. Unfortunately, if VoiceOver doesn't work with an app, you have no other options. I found that there are fewer accessible apps. For example, I can't read Kindle books on the Mac. I do not believe one operating system is better than the other. It all depends on your use case.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it always depends on the use case. And some people don't have the choice either. I mean, I think it depends on the type of job you do as well. So, you know, more often than not, you'll need a PC to do the job. Not necessarily because the PC's any better at it, but that there are specific applications that are required and only exist on the PC. I had that exact same issue at my last job as well. Perfectly valid reasons why one OS is required over the other. You know, and Mac is still, I think, for many people, the creative machine. So, you know,
I'm not even sure if that's true anymore, though. I know that's always been pushed as the case. It was widely used in the desktop publishing media sectors, right, for the longest time, from the 80s onwards. I'm not even sure that's true, though. People just seem to, since the success of the iPhone, I think a lot of people have been, oh, I love the iPhone. I wonder if I could use this on my desktop or laptop.
Yeah, but I'm talking about workplaces, though. Workplaces aren't going to make those kind of shifts. I mean, you're going to walk into an office full of Macs in a job which might be, let's just say, spreadsheet-based or database-based.
Database-based.
Another one to consider. So, yeah, I don't know. But it's interesting. I will say, I think that the way that Windows is going is certainly infuriating people. There seems to be a lot more issues around things like File Explorer. It seems as well that Microsoft are on a bit of an ad grab as well for, you know, they're looking for ways to either monetize through Windows, which I think is irritating people. Endless pop-ups for strange things. I remember that one of the things that actually annoyed me when I went back into Windows just last week, and there was a pop-up for some random thing that I hadn't installed, but it was just saying, hey, do you know this exists? Do you want to download it, install it? And I think, okay,
really?
That's all right. But I'm like, really, is that a thing now? Are they starting to sell me stuff?
Yeah, but is that from Windows or is that from a third party? Is that something like, have you got McAfee on?
Well, this is another question.
Have you got Norton?
Yeah,
have you got whatever?
Well, I don't have any of that on there. But I don't know where it came from. But it did appear to me in the Windows notification tray. So it clearly came through that method. It may not be coming directly from Microsoft. But the point is that there's more ability, it seems, to push these notifications through to say, hey, do this, hey, buy that. I don't get that on the Mac. I just don't get that. So yeah. I'm not saying that particular area is better or worse. I just, it's a thing I'm aware of.
It's just that you love Mac, Stephen Scott. We know it's fine.
It's not that I love it. It genuinely isn't. I'm so familiar with it. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so familiar with it. I grew up with it. It was my first machine I used. And I suppose it's like the iPhone to someone else's Android.
Of course,
to someone else's Windows.
Rebecca is absolutely right. There's pros and cons operating system. I think just that the accessibility of Windows hardware is far greater because you can get a cheap laptop for. I mean, I used to buy the kids' laptops for school. There was no way I'm going to spend $1,000 on one where I could pick up a Windows laptop very, very cheaply. I think that has a huge part to play.
Rebecca does mention something else, though, and that is Chromebooks. And it's funny, we kind of forget that Chromebooks exist in the constant discussion of Mac and Windows. We don't talk about Chromebooks. Now, they are education-focused? A lot of children use them. A lot of kids use them at school. That seems to be a fairly normal state of play at the moment. Google have managed to get themselves into the classroom. They've built software that's built around that as well. So, I mean, in theory, you could use any computer to access it because it's on, it's not an OS-dependent software, but it does work well with Chromebooks. And I think it's, I don't know if it's more locked down or more capable to be locked down than perhaps Windows and Mac is. I don't know. Certainly, I mean, I know when I was growing up, Macs were everywhere in schools, but we didn't have as much internet access back then. So, you know, a lot's changed.
Yeah, that's true.
But it does seem to be the device for education. But why is it not making its way into other areas? And it was interesting. I've been reading up a little bit more on Chromebooks, especially since the announcement by Google of the Chromebook Plus standard, which you might remember this came out, was it last year this came out? This new standard where they're saying now there are certain standards that hardware manufacturers have to meet in order to get the accreditation of Chromebook Plus. And that is, for example, it has to have an Intel Core processor in it, or an AMD Ryzen processor. And I think there's a specific type of processor that, you know, meets their standards.
Yeah, certain performance level.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I think they all start with Intel Core i3, but of course you can get i5, i7, I guess, Ryzen 5 or Ryzen 7. But then, of course, there's a RAM specification. Minimum's 8 gig, which, you know, does seem quite low, but bearing in mind it is a Chromebook and it's a web-based machine, it actually isn't, it doesn't really need that much. So a lot of Chromebooks do start at 4 gig. So they've set this bar for the Chromebook Plus standard at 8 gig and minimum hard drive of 128 gig SSD. But it is interesting, reading into more about this, there's a lot more you can do, it seems, with these Chromebooks nowadays. You just think it's a web browser inside a laptop, but it's more than that now because you can get apps on there.
Yeah.
And of course, we forget as well, perhaps we forget because of the inaccessibility of a lot of these tools, that a lot of people can access a lot of what we do nowadays online. So, I mean, an example of creative work is video editing, which you can now do via, there's a service called CapCut. It's an online video editor, and it's extremely powerful. And all of the processing, all of the updating, everything lives online. All the footage lives online. Everything you do is online. So there's no need to have a major heavy processor to do the job.
No.
That's kind of impressive, right? That's kind of impressive. That it's almost like the, what did they used to call it? Remember the terminal model, where it was like you connected up to the mainframe?
Yeah, the dumb
terminal was just a dumb terminal. Yeah, that's kind of what Google's doing with the Chromebook to some degree.
I think there's
local processing, obviously, as well.
Well, and that's exactly it. It used to be, and I think there's still the perception that a Chromebook is purely web. And if you haven't got an internet connection, it's useless. Now, that isn't the case anymore. There's lots of things you can do offline until you get a connection. But I think people have that perception of it, and it's almost, well, what if I don't have an internet connection? It means I can't use it. And that may not be true, but I think
not
that's
anymore,
a perception.
Apparently.
No, of course not. And, you know, it's just late to the game. It's people just, if I get a Windows or a Mac, I know that is the mainstream. Chromebook used to feel slightly out in the cold, I suppose. But, I mean, it's definitely an option. And accessibility-wise, it's a lot better than it was when it was first released.
Yeah, I mean, I've been asking people on Mastodon their view on this, and it's not been the most positive responses I've been getting back. I think one of them was, from memory, had it, used it, hated it. I think that was pretty much the order of setup there. Which, you know, I think, again, it's maybe a little bit like the Mac of 10, 15 years ago. I have friends who still say to me, oh, the last time I used a Mac, it would crash all the time. Yeah, when did you last use a Mac? Oh, well, 10, 15 years ago. Yeah, try a newer one. Try one that doesn't have G3 written on the front or PowerPC. I think you'll get on better. I
well,
kind of
guarantee
that.
It's the same with anything. It's, you know, you ask anyone who jumps on Android for a day, you know, oh, yeah, I tried it. I hated
it. Yeah, tried it, hated it.
Same
exactly.
with iPhone, like, or anything. Yeah,
give it a chance, right? So, you know, I do think that, I will say as well, I think the Chromebook Plus standard is really good for accessibility, because when I first got my Chromebook, the very first one I got was, I think, an Acer, and it was £99 in an Amazon Prime Day sale back, you know, near Christmas time, and it was dreadful. The accessibility on it was awful. It was so bad. I was telling the people at Google about it, and they said, goodness me, you cannot be demonstrating ChromeVox using that thing. Let us please send you something that will actually represent us properly. And of course, you know, you have to bear in mind these devices work absolutely fine. But it's the speech component, the adding the extra stress of running a screen reader on top was kind of highlighting its faults. But you wouldn't necessarily notice that in a day-to-day operation if you were using it visually. So it was a little bit unfair to kind of present. And I guess that's why Google were keen to say, you know, look, if you're going to use it, you got to see it on a proper system. And they did. They sent me this, and I've got it here. I actually brought it out the other day to bring it back to life because I'm intrigued in playing around with this again.
See if it's changed.
And it's, what, sorry?
To see if it's changed, any updates? See,
yeah. Because, I mean, it's probably a million updates waiting to happen. I can't get it to turn on right now, which is a bit of a problem. But I'm leaving it to charge. I'm sure the battery's flat, so I'm giving it some time to charge up. But this is the Google Pixel Slate. Now, this was one of the first devices that came out with Google Chrome, and it was Google who developed it. They brought out two. They brought out the Pixel Book and the Pixel Slate, if you remember. And this, although it came out, and I can't remember the year it came out, I was checking online last night because I thought, is there a shelf life on this? Will it get all the updates? You know, it's not exactly new. This is probably, I don't know, 8 years old, maybe? Maybe not as old as that, but maybe. I can't remember when I got this. But let's say 8 years. Is it going to be workable? Well, interestingly enough, when I Googled it last night, it said that it will actually be functional until 2027. That's when the updates run until for it.
Wow.
It's not actually that bad when you think about it, considering the age of it. That's not actually too bad. So, you know, Google seem to be keen to, you know, lengthen the life of their devices, but they're not giving up on it yet. A few people saying that it won't run Android 12, which is okay, I guess, because it wasn't really built, I guess, to do that. It was kind of built in the earlier days. And the purpose of Android 12 and Android 13 and 14 and all of that is to allow you to download Android apps to it. I'm not that interested in doing that. I'm just more interested in the overall OS and how it behaves with accessibility. I've got to say, last time I tried it, I really enjoyed it. The reason I came away from it and I didn't use it as a daily driver, it was because it just didn't have everything in it I needed. You know, there were lots of things that I could do with that I didn't necessarily.
It's almost like you're locked into another ecosystem other than Google.
Almost, right? It's like you're tied into something and you can't, and there's certain things you can't do. Yeah. Goodness me, don't tell the government in America. They'll be all over it.
Sorry, I don't mean to kick him off again. It's okay, everything's fine. I'd be interested to see if you persevere with that, though, and stay with it.
I'll be honest, I'm kind of just doing a bit of a play. I want to see how accessibility is.
Yeah, as long as you can turn it on.
Well, that would be nice. One area that I'm kind of interested in is Google Docs, because we've been using Google Docs a lot more, especially for the show and different things. And I know Google Docs is going to work really well with Google on this device and with the accessibility. So I've not had as much luck with the Mac and Docs. I mean, it's accessible and it does work, but I'm having issues. And I have a fear that I may have screwed something up. So I'm waiting on a callback from Google to hopefully get that resolved. But in the meantime, I want to have a play. I want to see what it's like. And it's also just nice having something new to play with, right? A nice new system to play with.
Of course. So, a nice new toy. But no, look, going back to the Chrome Plus certification, that's exactly the reason they bring these sort of things in, these systems in, because they don't want their brand to be represented in a terrible way by terrible hardware. So that's exactly. Microsoft have done the same thing with their AI PCs. Now, they've brought out a set of standards that a PC must meet to be certified as AI PC. Funnily enough, one of them is to have that Copilot key on the keyboard, which is...
I saw a rather snarky remark on Twitter, I think it was, about this, where someone said, so if I take this magic keyboard, whatever they call it on Surface, the Surface keyboard, you know, the one that clicks on, magnetically connects. So if I take this keyboard that's got the Windows Copilot key on it and snap it onto my Surface Pro 8, does that make it an AI PC?
No, because there's other standards it must meet. But yes, I understand. Yes, it does seem a little bit, okay, you're pushing something there. Does it really make a difference? But... Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, listen, let's move on because I'm going to get a couple more messages in before we go. Deborah has been in touch on various issues.
Hey, Stephen and Sean. This is Deborah from Houston, Texas. I enjoy the show and listen every day. Wanted to give a couple comments. Enjoyed listening to Ann Allison Sheridan, and I loved her comment about her friend telling her how hard it was to learn voiceover. I found that out myself when I was trying to learn it and was really frustrated at how slow I felt I was going, but we got there. Secondly, Sean, wanted to let you know the Bump Bump Braille Learn. I have used that to do just single letters to label the different kinds of soap in my dispensers in my shower. So you can start small with Braille, I'm finding, and I look forward to being able to learn some words to go with those single letters. Lastly, wanted to comment on the information from yesterday's broadcast related to Ira and the eclipse. Really appreciate that. I called some of my friends here around the country who are in the path of the totality as well, and we're going to be attending the IRA live broadcast from Rochester, and I want to try and pick up the Perkins information too to hear the audio translation of the eclipse as well. So you must have been reading my mind because I had some questions as I was listening to different information about the eclipse, about how could I hear the audio interpretation of the eclipse, and then who would be broadcasting something for the blind and visually impaired. And you answered all those questions before I even asked. Anyway, I'm glad to hear you guys will be getting some time off and some vacation in May, and just want to say that's wonderful. I will miss you, but it's very important to get some time off and have more than just a long weekend, because we don't want you guys to get burned out and want to go on to something else, because we need you, and I really rely on your podcast and enjoy the technical information, because I've always been a nerd. But I also like the behavioral and personal experiences that you share. It lets me and everyone know that we're not alone and that there's many ways to accomplish all kinds of tasks. It's just a matter of thinking about how something can be done and just being persistent. So again, thank you, and look forward to hearing your comments in the show. Goodbye.
Oh, thank you, Deborah.
That's nice.
That's a lovely message.
It is. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, look, we're here as long as, you know who.
Mr. F. God bless you, Mr. F.
Don't ever retire, Mr. F. Otherwise, we're doomed.
We are doomed.
Because no one else will be sensible enough to keep this thing going.
No. Well, sensible enough. No one else will put up with us. No, absolutely.
Well, there is that as
we
well.
Love you, Mr. F. We don't say that enough. Say it, Stephen.
Well, I kind of love Deborah at the moment, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah, thank you for that. Goodness me, so much in there. On the eclipse, I didn't take too much, because it was quite late at night by the time it passed here. Because it was about 8:30, I think, our time that it actually passed by. So, didn't get much of a chance. And I didn't imagine anybody here would get much of a chance to see it. Because, you know, we're probably covered in cloud. I think we were covered in cloud most of the night, which is not great for it. But I don't know how much of it you could see from the UK. I think It was more across North America you were able to see it. I think that was the reality.
Of course.
But of course, as you were saying, a lot of blind people were listening to it.
Yeah, and just having that ability, right? People taking the time to make that accessible, as Janine was saying, and of course from Perkins as well, who did the sound alight boxes. Absolutely fantastic. And just making us feel like we're included is more than enough. I loved it.
Oh, well, listen, one more message to get in before we go on. This is the ongoing situation, let's say, trying to get step count on the watch.
Hi, this is Graham Langford from Toronto. I, like Sean, had a problem with getting Siri to tell me how many steps I had done today or yesterday or whenever, and had followed the steps that we'd been told to. So I contacted the engineers at Apple, and apparently it only works if Siri is set up for English American or US English and also has a US Siri voice. I have it set currently for English Canada and have a British voice, but I did change it and tried it, and sure enough it works as long as you have those settings, or I think they said Cantonese. So either you'll have to speak American English or Cantonese in order to use it.
Don't do it.
Thanks.
Sean, bye-bye. Thank you, Graham, I appreciate that. Yeah, we're out of time, and I'm so glad we're out of time for many, many reasons.
I'm just about changing the settings now. That is so weird, but thank you. I'm definitely going to check that out.
There you go. Sometimes it is just language dependent, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? Yep. Anyway, that is it. We're out of time. Thank you so much for listening today. Keep in touch. Feedback at doubletaponair.com, 1-877-803-4567. We're back tomorrow with more. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm Margaret Shepherd of the AMI podcast, Tripping On Air. Every month, my co-host Alex Hajar and I spill the tea on what it's really like to live with MS. Watch Tripping On Air on YouTube or download wherever you get your pods.